Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Atlanta, what is going on? It is Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
Hey, man.
Happy Tuesday. And if you're wondering today, Mike and I will attempt to bring you back to earth when it comes to our Falcons, Mike, because I have something that I think is important. I think it's something that needs to be heard, and I think Falcon fans will go, oh, you're right. But we'll get to that in just a second. Hey, guys, follow us on social media at 929 The Game. That's our radio station. Of course, you can find us Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Follow Mike Bell at Mike Bell, ATL, and I'm at Put 'em Up. See Dukes, the radio show, Dukes and Bell 929. Well, the first weekend of the NFL is complete, Mike, and obviously, you know, everyone was watching last night because we wanted to see what our division rival was going to do in the New Orleans Saints. First of all, great game. And Deshaun Watson, if he's got to run for his life all season long, it's going to be a long year. But he made play after play, kept the Texans in it, and it looked like they were going to win. But you had controversial plays last night in this game. And then obviously the way the game ended with the Texans deciding to do what they did and how they tried to defend Drew Brees and company.
Yeah, Romeo Crennel, we were just talking about with Squid Belly and everybody out there. It's crazy because at one point it sure looked like after Deshaun goes down the field, two throws, boom, in the end zone. It was like a beauty. It's about as good a 2-minute drill as you can run. But geez, Louise, I guess the NFC South is going to be 0-4 to start the season, right? And Falcon fans wouldn't be feeling so bad. But the Falcons, we go up there, get run over by Minnesota, look completely unprepared. And once again, Sean Payton looks like an evil genius for the way the Saints pulled it out last night.
That's a great call. I mean, listen, should they have lost last night? Well, no, because there was time on the clock. And whenever there is time left, we know this. We've seen it up close and personal with Drew Brees. There is a shot. And, you know, their kicker, Lutz, he is a kid from Georgia State, Mike. Kicked at Georgia State, went to Northgate High School here in Atlanta. So he's very familiar with the surroundings. And that kid, I mean, he kicked it. There was no question about that.
Yeah, thing. Missed a field goal earlier in the game and said he knew he was going to be able to redeem himself, and they had the confidence in him. But just to have that kind of soft cushion, knowing that they had the timeout. And remember, if you didn't watch the end of the game last night, they complete a pass, and they're not calling a timeout, and the clock is ticking down. And you're saying, oh, Sean Payton's mishandling this. And they're able to get just enough yardage, get the timeout, and obviously then they kick the field goal. But it just looked like a tremendous tactical error. I think you're screaming at the TV how far off the ball, unless you're thinking the Saints can't kick a 58-yard field goal, which is apparently what Bill O'Brien's guys, Romeo Crennel and company, thought.
All right, so the Saints win. We don't. And as we keep up, remember, we don't start our division play until, you know, November, guys. We don't see the Saints until November 10th, and then we get them back here on Thanksgiving night. But, you know, from afar, we're watching and seeing. I will say this about the Saints. That is not a team that's too far off from what I saw at the end of last season offensively, Mike. They still have all those weapons. Brees is making the plays necessary. Everybody thought the run game might fall off.
Right.
I didn't feel that way last night. Now, again, they found ways to get Kamara into the matchups that they wanted to create in the second half, you know, and he continues to show you why he's one of the best running backs in the National Football League. But my point is this. Offensively, they're as potent as anybody in the NFL. There was no fall-off. I felt the same way when I watched the Chiefs over the weekend. Saints are right there, man.
And again, that you know, sort of Swiss Army knife that Taysom Hill is that we've seen here in Falcons games of late. Sean Payton loves to dial him up. I thought early in the game, you know, you're pretty much one-dimensional. They're going to be running with him, and then he catches a touchdown pass. Brees rifles a throw into the end zone. So everybody wants to write off Drew Brees, you know, his arm strength and all this. You know, he's still able to do what he's got to do. You know, Ted Ginn Jr. is able to contribute. You know, they still got a tight end you got to cover. So, yeah, certainly with the way our I know you got to be careful not politically correct. The way our defense looked like a Chinese fire drill, Carl, up there in Minnesota, we got some things we're going to have to dial up before we get into the meat. Luckily, we got a few games before we get into the Saints and the NFC South. But it ain't going to be easy against the Eagles because Doug Peterson is going to look. And we're going to hear from Coach. If you missed it, we spoke to Doug over the summer. And he was out in Tahoe playing in that big sports celebrity golf tournament. But to hear what Coach has got to say, they're going to probably maybe do running back by committee. There's certainly some things they're going to try to exploit in the run game and see if Dan Quinn and our defense has fixed what they did not and were not able to do against Minnesota.
Now, the Eagles are going to be without defensive tackle Malik Jackson. That news coming out literally today as he's expected to miss the season with Liz Frank an injury that's going to shut him down. So the Eagles will already be affected by injuries. And we said this. To start the season, we knew Minnesota was going to be good. The Eagles' defensive front is good as well, but this is certainly a blow, and hopefully we can get some more of that running game going against the Eagles this Sunday. We're going to talk plenty about that, guys. Obviously, the Braves continue to roll, Mike, and, you know, if you're fortunate and you got, you know, more than one TV on at the same time, maybe you were like me last night watching the game and had the Braves on at the same time. Literally, as I'm tweeting about the Saints, here's Josh Donaldson going deep again, and it almost happened simultaneously. But I got to say something, man. If, in fact, we win this division, and you guys know I think we will, is the MVP going to come from the Braves? Because you're looking at all these guys who have contributed. Now, Mike, we're only three games behind the Dodgers with a chance to catch them for the best overall record in the National League. For all the conversation we had about Acuna, who's still chasing 40-40 and might get there, guys, he's only a few home runs away from it, six stolen bases, and he's going to get to 40-40 to be the fifth person in Major League Baseball history to ever do it. And then you've got Donaldson doing what he's doing. Can you ignore one of these Braves for MVP?
No, I mean, Freddie Freeman's certainly in the mix if he keeps the average over 300. I think a guy who's kind of moved up now ahead of a Yelly Belly show is a guy we just saw in Washington, Anthony Rendon. Because he's leading the league in average. He's leading the league in RBI. He's up there with RBIs with Freddie. Freddie just surpassed him. But I do think it's kind of been, you know, it was Yelich and Bellinger for much of the season when you're talking about who you thought was going to take that that MVP. But certainly, Freddie Freeman is in the mix. I just think Acuna's going to have to get that average back up if he's going to be in serious consideration. But Freddie leading the league in RBIs. He's got a 301 average. And if the Braves go on to win this division going away, to your point, I think Freddie would be the first amongst Braves to have that shot.
I do too. Donaldson, I'm very happy with his what he's done this season, man. And you look at the numbers, again, comparable to his 2015 MVP season.
And the third base play, by the way, to touch you off, the defensive play makes up for what the average is. For guys out there maybe who aren't looking at this guy day in, day out.
He's amazing, man. 37 home runs, that's four shy of tying his career high. So Donaldson has lived up to all the expectations as to what is he going to be. We're giving him $23 million. I'm going to tell you, that's a bargain. Now, looking at this thing, Mike, bringing him back next year, he's going to cost a lot more than $23 million.
Yeah, it does kind of make you tap the brakes on Austin Riley. You know, I remember Austin Riley was the guy that everybody was couldn't wait to get him up here. And again, it's still a work in progress, and hopefully he's going to, you know, be able to find his groove and consistently, you know, handles the up, you know, the upper parts of the strike zone, make better decisions at the plate. But again, after starting like a house of fire, he cooled off, and now you're right. But I think Donaldson's going to be a hot property. Does Donaldson enjoy the Braves clubhouse and enjoy this Atlanta experience enough where he'll take a three-year deal, two-year deal? I mean, what's a contract going to look like? He's not going to take a Markakis deal.
No, and nor should he with this kind of production. Your thoughts, guys, 404-741-0929. We'll talk more about our Braves as they continue this series with the Nats. The one thing that Mike and I have both questioned, and rightfully so, because it's kind of been, okay, we could get better there, is the performances of Folty. Last night, seven innings, one earned run, seven strikeouts. He didn't walk anybody. Arguably, maybe his best performance since coming back to the majors after being down in AAA, Mike. I mean, you look at it and you go, all right, we expect big things. This is kind of what I've expected from Folty. And last night, he looked the part. For the first time, to me, in a while, he looked the part.
You know, because he had confidence. You know what I mean? I think with Folty, you watch it sometimes. You know, you saw it the last time we were joking around about him. He was all hot with the vapors because it was like a 95-degree day in Atlanta. He looked composed. He looked confident. You see when he's shaking the glove there, you know, he's dialed in. And he's up, you know, even when he's pitching from the stretch, he had low pitch counts. He made good – he kept the ball. I mean, made good decisions. You know, and I heard last night it was kind of fun to watch and hearing Frank Gore talking about it on TV. Just looked like a different guy. But that's the best performance. And if you take it back to before he even got sent down, they won the 10 last games he started, you know, which is pretty impressive. So, yeah, that's good Folty. That's all-star Folty from last year.
We're going to tell you about Nick Markakis, who's on his way back. What's going to happen tonight, what the pitching matchup looks like. It is Dukes and Bell, guys. Big show for you. Todd Blackledge is going to join the show at 3 o'clock today to talk some college football. He's actually going to be at the Penn State Pitt game this weekend. But we'll get his thoughts on what we saw coming off the weekend and who impressed him. Because, you know, you look around college football – there are a lot of impressive performances. I don't think there was one bigger than what we saw at LSU going on the road against Texas and really showing the rest of the country, and I think the SEC, this is a new LSU offense. You're going to have to deal with us. We've always had the athletes on the outside and certainly the skill players, but if the quarterback play is on par like it was Saturday, Mike, this is going to be a very tough LSU team to stop.
Yeah, ironically, LSU looked more like a Big 12 team than an SEC team because their secondary was terrible against the Longhorns. They're going to have to tighten up. They are. They had the big battle about who's DBU. Texas thought they were, and they were pushing and shoving before the game even started. But once it got going, man, if you're an LSU fan, you're just like, where has this been for a decade? Because even going back to, like, you know, the end of Saban and the Mad Hatter, it was a very predictable offense, very conservative. Don't have to tell LSU fans that. Now, Carl, just got to tighten up some things on defense and watch out. Finally, maybe they're going to snap this losing streak, or at least certainly take Alabama to the fourth quarter, which is something they haven't been able to do lately.
No. So we'll talk to Todd Blackledge about that. We'll get his thoughts about the Dogs as well as Alabama and all things college football, guys, coming up at 3 o'clock. As we get back to last night's games, by the way, were you impressed with Derek Carr and the Raiders and the way they responded after all this foolishness with Antonio Brown?
Yeah, John Gruden was telling the media, saying, look, good luck to the Patriots. He said, I'm over with this. He says, we gave it a shot. I can't deal with it anymore, talking about Antonio Brown. He says, look, he never really practiced with us. He wasn't really part of the game plan. These guys were all ready to work. And he said, if you watch the Raiders during preseason, we looked good, and now we were able to continue that to the regular season. Josh Jacobs, now they got a big running back they're confident in. He took some of the pressure off Carr. You know, Flacco and the Broncos couldn't get out of their own way at times, but it really looked good. And Raiders, you know, the knock on the Raiders this year was their defense. That's a great way to start the season back there, man. By the way, last time, Carl, you're going to see a baseball infield in the NFL once they move to Vegas. That still looks like terrible on TV, but playing there at Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. But watch the game last night because I had a lot of Raiders on my fantasy teams.
Yeah, man.
Go Raiders!
Yeah.
Yes, I was very satisfied with that. How'd you do, by the way, in our shenanigans? Or I should say our 92-9 the game.
Well, first of all, I'm undefeated in both leagues. Mike, I am I'm impenetrable. I am undefeated. I am brilliant at fantasy football. I beat Wendy.
And by the way, put this on tape because as soon as Carl starts losing, he becomes the human bye week.
I beat Wendy, and I felt bad about the way I beat Wendy down, but Wendy, it's business. It's not personal. And then, Mike, in the Shenanigans League, well, listen, I won. This is how good I am. I won, and Jameis Winston gave me nothing. Nothing. Yeah, that's how good I am.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem. We got injuries. We'll talk more about this, guys. Get you some fantasy stuff coming up later
in
the week. I'm 2-1. I lost my big money league in Miami. Got smoked.
Okay.
I got smoked. Guy just crushed me. Just, I mean, don't get started. Don't even get me started.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, man. By the way, I do want to mention this just because it's what we do. How did Marcus Davenport do last night?
Oh, what did the Saints do?
Marcus Davenport.
He got trucked is what he got.
Yeah, I think Laramie Tunsil could have smoked a bowl and still done that against him last night.
Yeah, man. All that conversation. Listen, the dude on that defense, you guys know, if we start breaking down that D-line, and we've talked about this over the last couple of years, but it's not him. Now, he's a nice piece, but he's not the piece.
No, but everybody in the NFC South loses, and the Saints are in first place.
Yeah, Cameron Jordan, that dude. Hey, man, we got more to get to. We'll come back. We'll hit some headlines. Coming up in 20 minutes. I'm going to tell you why you should just chill when it comes to our Falcons. It's all on the way on Dukes and Bell. It is Dukes and Bell, guys. Happy Tuesday. I know yesterday, Mike, I was a little half-cocked. I was a little upset. I'm not going to lie. I think a lot of Falcon fans were. You were being reasonable and saying calm down.
And a lot of people get freaked out when we put the shoe on the other foot. I'm supposed to be the maniac. Again, we are the Gumby and Pokey of radio. I'm Gumby. I'm the loose cannon. You're the brains of you're the voice of reason, the brains of the operation.
Sometimes. Not all the time. But yesterday, that was the case. Because, I just felt like the culmination of the lead-up and the build-up to the start of the season and to wet the bed the way we did was embarrassing, plain and simple. And, from that standpoint, knowing the talent we have, and I know Coach Quinn is upset, and I know all the guys in that building, listen, nobody wants to feel that way. I mean, none of those players want to feel the way they did yesterday. So my guess, and it's a pretty good one, that guys are going to respond on Sunday. Now, that doesn't mean we win, but I can guarantee we're going to play a lot better than we did on the previous Sunday.
I mean, one thing where you can look at the Eagles and say, we should be able to throw the football against them. That's one of those things where, we had two games in the end of the playoffs in 17, the 18 season starter where, we just couldn't score in the red zone. We couldn't do the things we needed to do with Sarkisian and whatever the other reasons were. And this season, the turnovers killed us. We had two very bad, bad mistakes. Matt Ryan, if you want to say that, he had the right idea on the first throw to Julio, okay, but it's still an interception. And the second one was inexcusable. Freeman can't fumble. But the Eagles' secondary is not good. They got a great front seven, although they do lose Malik Jackson for the season with the Liz Frank injury. So if the offensive line can hold up, and now Jamon Brown punches in at right guard, and for as many as, many reps as he can handle, Carl, it'll be Tyler, I won't be Sombrello, it'll be Caleb McGarry. But can we give Matt the time to go down the field on this Eagles secondary?
That's going to be the great question. We're going to talk more about it throughout the course of the show as we continue to break down not only what happened Sunday, but as we start to take a look ahead. Today, an off day for the Falcons as far as the players are concerned. A little rest. Mike, and then they hit the field tomorrow, and they'll be back at it trying to put in a game plan in that will be successful against this Eagles defense.
And I know because we've talked about this before, the PSL phenomenon, anytime a big heritage team comes in, it's very difficult to resist the temptation, just like for some Georgia fans, although ticket prices have come down for the Notre Dame game. Be a lot of Eagles fans in the building on Sunday night. Be a lot of Eagles fans here for the weekend. Mm. And that's just part of it. I hate it, and I wish we had, you know, the kind of home field advantage we have for Atlanta United. But that's just the reality of the NFL. So just, if you hadn't got your tickets, Falcon fans, please do. Buy them. Get in there. Let's rep. And let's make some noise. And so don't look as bad as I think it may look on Sunday night TV.
Yeah, listen, it would it have helped, Mike, if we played better and people felt better? Yes, of course.
There's always folks on the fence in this town. We get it. You know, when the Falcons are up, people jump on the bandwagon. When they look like they did, people immediately get off. And over 22 years of here now in Atlanta, for me, I'm with Carl. My first reaction watching this, I got angry. You know what I mean? Because they put the work in, they put the sweat and the tears, we put our emotional investment into it as fans, and you see them lay an egg like that, and you get hot. But the good news is, you know, a lot of other teams look like crap in the first week of the NFL. Let's hope that we are able to now, again, we lay an egg on Sunday, we're going to have a different conversation here on the show on Monday morning.
All right, man, more to get to with the Falcons. Stay tuned. 10 minutes, I'll tell you why they should just, and you should just chill. Hey, man, it's Dukes and Bell. Jahi behind the glass today. Craig, again, out all week. Craig on a cruise with his family. We were talking about it with Big Hugh. We had a meeting today, and he was like, where is he at? Where is he going? I'm not sure, but I'm sure we'll have stories to tell when Craig gets back next week.
Look, I mean, Craig could be on a date and still pull another chick's number, let alone being out there with the family.
Oh, that's not right, Mike. That's just not right.
No, Craig's got solid game. Look, one thing I'll say about Craig, he's got mad game. He's got tremendous skills. He's a solid wingman. He, you know, he's got a great personality. Women want to get to know him. You know, once they get to know him, they don't want to be around him. But once they get to, it's the getting to know him process, Jahi, where he really excels on that first date.
Yeah, man. I would agree with Mike on this. You know, the first, what, 5-10 minutes of the conversation is really good.
When Craig, it comes time for the check and Craig doesn't have any money, or he tells a girl to park in a parking lot where her car gets towed.
And he doesn't want to pay.
These are all things that have happened. I mean, that's generally great starter, sometimes not a great finisher.
Well, that's exactly. So, you know, the thing about this boat, though, he doesn't have to pay anything. It's already all paid.
All inclusive. Yeah. So, again, we'll get some Craig's stories from his Tales on the Seven Seas when he gets back next week.
Nice phrase. Hey, Bo Morgan is the executive producer of this show.
That's C's, S-E-A-S.
Oh, okay, yeah, right. Jahi, let's hit some headlines. Let's start out with our magic number, 10, guys. Combination of Braves wins, Nationals losses. How fast we can get there. If they keep losing, we keep winning. It happens a lot faster. All I know, Mike, is the countdown is on with our Bravos. And last night, two guys went deep again. Ronald Acuna with the leadoff home run.
And a high fly ball is walloped to deep left field. It's a leadoff homer. Great way to start the road trip. A leadoff homer on the game's second pitch for Ronald Acuna Jr. That's his 38th.
That boy's something else, man.
I mean, man.
He is, he's just, again, two home runs away from 40, six stolen bases away from 40. I think he can get there. And here's the deal now. Every time he gets on base, I'm like, steal! Take a shot. I don't even care if he gets thrown out.
I mean, it will be harder of the two things to reach as far as that part of the 40-40 equation, but good to see him swinging the bat with a 1-for-3 in RBI, two walks also, so good plate discipline last night. Josh Donaldson also goes yard, but I think the big story from last night is how good Mike Foltynewicz looked. Goes 7 innings. Again, 7 innings, and Snicker actually let him get north of 100 pitches. How about that?
Well,
let him finish the 7th inning and had a great job. I mean, only gave up 3 hits. I was really blown away by how cool it's again. It's like we got the Folty back. Like the Monstars stole Folty's confidence in game for half the season, and now he looked like the guy that was an all-star last year.
Let's hear from my manager on Folty.
He was just in one of those grooves. I mean, the rhythm was really good. He was repeating his delivery, the confident. You know, I looked up there at one point, and he had, 22 strikes and 8 balls or something like that in one go, and just the whole package was really good.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm with Brian Snicker, too, when he said, I want to see more of this.
I mean, it hadn't been consistent enough yet. You know, like, see him do that right there, like, you know, 3 or 4 times in a row would be good. But that was really good. And, you know, didn't have to throw 98 all the time. I mean, he was pitching. You know, he was hitting spots and changing speeds, and it was really good. Kept the ball down really well. You know, that was a really strong outing.
Yeah, Aaron Nola, we came real close to blowing it wide open. Joyce hits into the double play, and that kind of was a drag. You did get a run in, but yeah, there was a real chance you could have just knocked Aaron Nola out of the box in the first inning. But they do get rolling. They win 7-2. Other than Tomlin giving up a home, you know, late, that's easy. I'm not complaining about the bullpen. I think the bullpen, as you pointed out last week, has finally stabilized. It's a good win. So now you're 9.5 up. As you said, magic number comes down, and the Nats have the Twins, which is not an easy out for them.
All right, guys. It is Max Fried tonight, 16-4 with a 3.86 ERA. I feel good about Max going to the mound tonight to pitch against this Nationals team. I just think, you know, and we can talk about all the other things in our division. Braves are just basically taking the confidence of all these other teams. I mean, Nationals came in here needing to win. Sit down. We go on the road. Phillies, oh, we got to win. Sit down. They are just slapping other teams in this division and simply showing them, Mike, we are the team to beat. And right now, you know, again, the countdown is on. It's never done until it's done. But you got to feel really good about what you're seeing with this club. And remember, guys, we've done this without some of our key cogs. Nick Markakis out, Mike. I mean, they're 28 and I think 10 without Markakis in the lineup, or 28 and is it 18 or 12? That's incredible.
Well, and then remember you lost Dansby Swanson for a month. You know, the old days, that would have been, you know, 21-day DL or more. And you're able to just keep on trucking. All the guys we've mentioned that you plugged in, Echeverria and certainly Cervelli, all these guys contributing. Just real quick, I read this morning. Ken Rosenthal had a blog. About the time the Braves went and got Dallas Keuchel, the Phillies were still in first place in this division. And just saying how, at the end of the day, they've spent so much money, but they've just kind of lost their way. And they're still in the mix, though. Three games out in the wild card. Basically, the entire National League is alive in the wild card. But interesting to see how, with the time Keuchel got signed by the Braves, how the Braves team ERA has dropped. Things started trucking, and the Phillies started having all sorts of issues.
Falcons with an off day, guys. Dan Quinn talking about, now we got to turn the page and start getting ready for these Eagles.
Just wanted to make sure when I got back with the team again, we said after we're done today and we watched it, we went through it, the preparation begins again. Got to get the mistakes corrected and get our football right like we like to play.
So the other big news, and we found this out yesterday and confirmed by the team now, with Chris Lindstrom and how that's going to affect our O-line.
Yep, next man up. That next man up is Jamon Brown. So, you know, Schweitzer did a decent job in relief by the time that, unfortunately, Lindstrom goes out with a foot injury. It's the new IR, so there is a chance he'll be back by week 10 or 11. So, you know, fingers crossed on that one. But the Falcons did invest in O-line for a moment like this. Not the way we want to start the season, obviously, but you're seeing guys dropping all around the NFL in week one. Nobody's crying for us. Nobody's crying for the Eagles. Malik Jackson, who's out for the year. So we just got to step up and hope that the guys we plucked up in the free agent market can do the job.
Last night, the National Football League finished up week one. Two Monday night games. The first one was really good. Actually, I enjoyed both games, but the Saints beat the Texans. Here's how it sounded.
No timeouts for anybody here, so this kick will come off here. Kick is up. It's good! It's good! 58 yards, Will Lutz with the game winner. Saints win it, 30-28.
Courtesy of Saints Radio Network.
Yeah, I'd say that's not the reaction from Houston. Man, it was an amazing final 2 minutes. Deshaun Watson goes down the field. It looks like Drew Brees has got this. They've been just putting pressure on him. 6 sacks for the Saints defense, aside from your boy, Marcus Davenport. But the Saints getting after it, and Deshaun Watson goes right down the field. 2 throws, boom, boom, they're in the end zone. And, yeah, can you score too soon? Yeah, even less than half a minute to go, Brees gets down the field. Aggressive strategy by Sean Payton to not call the timeout. It works out perfectly. We talked to start the show. For whatever reason, Romeo Crennel's got his DBs off the ball, knowing all you have to do indoors is just get 10 or 15 yards, and you got the field goal. So tactical screw-up by the Texans, and they paid for it.
What the Saints do?
Marcus Davenport.
You want to see more impact when you give up your whole draft. That's all.
Were you
going
around with Saints fans last night?
No, you know what? I was chilling, minding my own business, Mike. It's not in my nature to do those kinds of things. But I was getting tweets from guys who were saying, Dukes, make sure you talk about this Marcus Davenport thing, because they were watching, like many people around the country. Laremy Tunsil, who literally just got off the plane with the Texans, was just owning him. And that's something that, again, when you give up your entire draft, Saints fans, shouldn't be happening to a guy. Cam Jordan is that dude on that defensive line. But all the conversation about what they were going to do and basically, you know, Super Bowl or bust, they didn't get there. They didn't win it. And so now, you know, I think guys are looking at Marcus Davenport going, okay, is he going to turn into this incredible player? Maybe he does, but he hasn't quite yet.
So I'll let Carl handle the trolling. I had a bunch of Saints fans trying to get my goat last night on Twitter.
What
about,
were they saying?
Well, typical Saints stuff. And I'm always like, my first reaction is, go back home. Rebuild your city. Especially Saints fans who moved here after Katrina and never went home. Because obviously they never want to return to Stinky Town, as John Fricke would say. By the way, you want a fun stat?
Yeah, man.
you have a 1 in 88 chance of suffering a violent crime incident if you live in the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, it's one of the most violent cities in the country. We know that.
Squidbilly, 1 in 88.
We just visit and get out. But the Raiders beat the Broncos 24-16. That was the other game last night. We talked about it. All the conversation about AB and what it was, what it wasn't. You mentioned it, Mike. John Gruden kind of put it out there. I'm done with this. You know, I've kind of been hitting the side of the head. I'm moving on. But I thought really, guys, and this was something that we talked about when the Raiders drafted him, Josh Jacobs, 23 carries. He had 85 yards. He had two touchdowns, but he was catching the ball out of the backfield. That took a lot of pressure off of Derek Carr.
You know, and unlike some Alabama running backs who have come to the league with a lot of wear and tear, Josh Jacobs is relatively fresh by Alabama standards. So the guy, now again, didn't really have the big breakaway. Longest run was 13, but they had a guy that could ground and pound, gets in the end zone twice, taking pressure off Carr. If you own Terrell Williams in your fantasy league, he's going to be the go-to guy. Seven targets, one touchdown. So, they got some things cooking. If the defense can play well, I don't know what the Broncos are. They looked awful in the first half, came out sleepwalking.
Todd Blackledge joining us in less than 30 minutes. But when we come back, all of us just take a deep breath. I'll tell you why next. Hope you're having a good day. Todd Blackledge is going to join us in about 20 minutes. We'll also give you the information about Monster Jam tickets. I know some guys have hit us up, Mike. They want to go to Monster Jam. I said, well, we'll give you the info. Don't worry. Squid's already got his tickets, I think, if I'm right.
He's a big fan.
Big fan of Monster Jam. Hey, man, as we've been talking about our Falcons and how we feel and what's been going on coming off this loss on Sunday, and, you know, however it is you feel, you should feel. If you feel like things are going to be okay, that's fine. If you feel like things are a mess and you're not liking the way things transpired and you're a little worried, that's fine too. But I want to take you guys back. And, you know, sometimes history shows us things that we forget about. And we've all got short memories. We live in an ADD society right now, right? We want it right now. If I can't get it right now, I move on. Well, we forget that just a few years ago, Mike, we started out the season and we lost to the Buccaneers 31-24. Jameis Winston threw four touchdowns. And what's crazy about this game that I'm talking about, and I'll give you the year in just a second, was that Freeman was not our leading rusher. A guy named Coleman was. He's now with the 49ers. He had 22 yards in that game. Free had 20 on 11 carries. Matter of fact, Coleman, Tevin, was the leading receiver in the game. We end up losing because, believe it or not, we couldn't score in the red zone, and we were still ticked off from the previous season about not being able to punch it in. So we had four trips into the red zone. We had one touchdown, and Matt Bryant kicked three field goals. We lost 31-24, and we came in, and we were PO'd. That was 2016. You know what we did? After that, we went on the road against the Raiders, and we won 35-28. We went on the road against the Saints, and we won 45-32. We came back home and beat the Panthers 48-33. And then we went on the road, Mike, against a stout Broncos team, and we were all worried about how we were going to play against the Broncos, and we beat them 23-16. We won four of our first five games in 2016, and I don't want to tell you guys what ultimately happened that year. Now, I'm not telling you we're going to go to the Super Bowl. You know I'm far from that right now. But the idea that they can't bounce back or that things won't turn around or that they won't put it together is crazy. Because we've already seen what can happen in these situations. So I'm bringing up our Super Bowl year because when we lost that first game, and certainly it wasn't as ugly, Mike, as what we saw on Sunday, but there were still issues looming from the previous season that made us go, are we ever going to be able to punch it in?
Well, yeah, we had that terrible losing streak. You started it by saying you thought we were going to go 9-0. But, yeah, I mean, that was the year where we're coming off the weird feeling of the 500 year, the major collapse, center of the offensive line just basically disintegrating, Matt throwing all those picks at the center of the field. Remember linebackers doing the peekaboo, coming out and grabbing the ball. So, yeah, we had that residual hangover from the way the 2015 season ended. We weren't sure that Shanahan was the right guy. And to your point, we got on a roll because we looked ugly in that Bucs game. Our defense, remember, Safarian Jenkins lays out for the touchdown in the end zone. We scored the last 11 points, but it really wasn't even that close. So I'm with you. You know, the question now is, remember, that was a different defensive coordinator who Dan then later replaced that year and took over. Dan's in charge now. I'm a little confused about our defense. That's the thing.
Richard Smith.
Yeah. Richard Smith was the one that Dan relieved of his duties and basically from, like, what was it, week 10, whatever it was, and Dan kind of took it from there. I get it. You want to have some perspective, and I did say this yesterday. to your point, there's a lot of teams that look awful right now that we think are going to be playoff teams. I mean, the Steelers, I don't even know what that was against the Patriots, other than you think the Patriots are going to be a juggernaut. There's a lot of teams out there that have higher expectations than even we do, that have more respect around the country, that laid an egg. But I don't care about them. I care about us. I want to see this offensive line get – got to see Freeman getting the rhythm going. If it's, by the way, I'm not prepared to let this free experiment, because I know we're paying him a lot of money. If he's not getting the job done, then give Ito Smith the lion's share of the carries, and we'll get the running game going that way. You with me on that?
I am. Because, you know, the reason why I bring up these numbers is Free didn't have a great game Sunday. You go back to 2016, week one, 20 yards on 11 carries, and we're going, where's Free? What's going on?
Yeah, we rushed for 52 yards in that game. It was brutal. We were one-dimensional.
It was brutal. So we forget. We were down to the Bucs at one point in that game, 31-3. Final score, guys, was 31-24. We were PO'd. I don't know if this team can turn it on like that team. Every year is different. Every group is different. But what I will tell you is there's some guys on this team that were on that team that understand that, you know what, sometimes it happens. All right, you know what, let's go put this thing together. And I remember, Mike, we talked a lot about this. Going on the road, and you got to go back to 2016 and what people thought about these teams at that point. The Raiders and the Saints, oh, we're going to be 0-4 to start the season. And we win four of our next five.
Yeah, went on the road in Oakland, and that's where both Coleman and Free were running between the tackles. We really established the run game in that one. So, yeah, I mean, that's why, guys, I get it. You don't want to fall into that prisoner of the moment thing. We're all ticked off. We got embarrassed. We looked ugly on TV. Okay, you have all your expectations built in. You're emotionally invested, as we said, to start the show, and you lay the egg. Now, we come out and we do some of the same things against the Eagles, then we're going to get a really different conversation, you and I, next Monday. But let's hope that these things are addressed. Dan Quinn has put his butt on the line. Dan Quinn is responsible for the defense. We've got enough former head coaches here to basically, we can run four teams. So let's hope these guys can get it figured out between now and Sunday night. Good news is Malik Jackson is out. Bad news is Timmy Jernigan is in. So Timmy Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, guys who've made a history about really getting after the interior line play of the Falcons and really stymied some of the things why we scored so few points against the Eagles the last few times out.
This is not going to be an easy test, but if you want to just chill, this is the reason why. Because we've seen this happen, and we've seen it happen in a year where nobody thought we were going to do anything, which is fine. But in 2016, after that first week, nobody was clamoring to say the Falcons are going to the Super Bowl. Not one analyst around the country, not one person on radio or television was saying, oh, Falcons lost. Jameis Winston threw four touchdowns. Falcons are going to the Super Bowl. Nobody was saying that. Nobody's saying it now because of the way we looked and how we looked so crappy on Sunday.
But to your point, 15, we choked away the season after starting 5-0. Last year we had, injuries that overwhelmed us. We finished 7-9, and we start basically right where we laid off, where we finished, unfortunately, to your point. I get it. But, I mean, this is why, guys, as Falcon fans, you got to try to look at it. It's not the college game where one loss derails your season. You know, you got 15 more weeks to get this thing figured out. But, again, this is not an easy test against the Eagles on Sunday night.
No, it's not. But after being upset, and rightfully so, and I'll be upset if we lose and play the way that we did Sunday, again, the problem with Sunday is, again, not the L. It's the way you lost. Taking L's in the NFL, all these teams are talented. I talk about it all the time. There's this much difference between us and, believe it or not, the Arizona Cardinals. They got talented players, too. It's not that. But when you go out and kill yourself with these mistakes, Mike, and you get back to the discipline, or check that, the lack thereof, which is what's been the situation here with Dan Quinn. I said it in the offseason. Nobody wants to hear it. We've got to be a more disciplined football team. That starts up top.
Yeah, but we got to get this defense going. I mean, the other thing is, the defense, where's the pass rush coming from? Okay, whatever. We were joking around with Dave Archer, who was in here cutting some spots earlier, and Jarvis, who played D-line in college. You know, at times, Carl, this 5-2 sort of thing we got with extra defensive tackles in the middle, we've got to be able to get heat on the quarterback. Carson Wentz is athletic. He can move in the pocket. DeSean Jackson is back to being the old DeSean Jackson with a super over-the-top playmaking ability. So if we're going to sit there and let, Carson Wentz go 1,001, 1,002, we're going to have a problem. So let's hope first things first, Dan Quinn, you took over the pass rush. You took over the defense. Fix it.
Yeah, 9 penalties, though, Mike. That's a problem.
But that's first week, to your point earlier, that's first week of the season, a lot of undisciplined play. That doesn't discount not getting the quarterback on the ground.
Block punt, that's undisciplined. That's stuff that's got to be done during the week, and you know better to where you're supposed to be as far as your assignment. Well, maybe and guys just weren't there.
Your new special teams coordinator gets us together.
Let's hope so. More on the Falcons coming up, guys. More on what we think about the Eagles. It is an off day for our Falcons, and you'll hear more from Dan Quinn. But coming up next, we'll talk some college football. Todd Blackledge, ESPN college football analyst, joins us next on Dukes and Bell.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.